Thank you, Chonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, July the 1st, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The son of the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo, who died 16 years ago, says most Zimbabwean leaders are too self-centered, a situation that has led to the current social, economic and political problems in the country.
The crop of leaders we have today, they like money. They are for themselves. They are not for the people. Dala went out of his way to do things for the people.
The Harare City Council has suspended town clerk Tendai Mahachi as the city with dirty streets, collapsing buildings and high crime rate almost crumbles.
I'm not particularly excited about commenting on this one. I'm sure you'll you bear with me for now.
And the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission told Parliament today it is concerned by the widespread human rights violations nationwide. These stories and much, much more coming up.
Harare in the 1980s was affectionately referred to as the Sunshine City because of its cleanliness. The city was orderly with well-maintained roads, bright street lights, and clean running water. The blooming jacaranda trees also gave the city a unique view. But things have taken a bad turn as the city has been decaying since the 1990s. Buildings are now resembling a war zone and children hang around on street corners with nowhere to go, and homeless people tell stories of disease and crime. These pictures reveal real-life scenes from an urban area hit hard by the recession and still stumbling dangerously into poverty. What has gone wrong in Harare? Studio 7's Blessing Zulu has more.
Until the late 1980s, the government supplied safe drinking water to 85% of Zimbabwe's urban population. But decades of neglect and corruption have left the pipes dry, forcing many people to drink contaminated water. A cholera epidemic in 2008 killed more than 4,000 people and sickened another 100,000 in the country. Though Harare has not been spared from the economic crisis Zimbabwe in general is going through, many residents allege that the political logjam at townhouse has worsened the situation. Local government minister Ignatius Chombo is alleged to have taken sides with town clerk Tendai Mahachi, who is being accused of refusing to work with the opposition MDC mayor Bernard Manyenyeni and his councillors. Yesterday, Manyenyeni shocked fellow councillors and residents by announcing that he was suspending Mahachi indefinitely, accusing him of refusing to furnish council with the salary schedule for the city's top executives. Asked by Studio 7 to elaborate, Manyenyeni said he was not at liberty to do so.
I'm not particularly excited about commenting on this one. I'm sure you bear with me for now.
This is not the first time that Manyenyeni has tried to suspend Mahachi, as he did it last year, and Minister Chombo rescinded the decision. We asked Manyenyeni if he has sought Chombo's approval this time around. Attempts to get a comment from Chombo and Mahachi were futile, as they were said to have been logged in an emergency meeting. But Deputy Mayor Thomas Muzua shot down reports that Manyenyeni has engaged in Lone Ranger tactics in suspending Mahachi without the knowledge of the full council.
Yeah, he was sent by his immediate boss, who is the mayor. Because under our constitution, a person is given, is sent on leave maybe by his immediate boss. So the mayor is the man responsible for sending Mahachi on leave. I think he's the best person to answer on that one.
Groups representing residents, the Harare Residents Trust, or HRT, and the Combined Harare Residents Association, or CRA, both welcomed the decision to suspend Mahachi. Director of the HRT, Precious Shumba, accused Mahachi of stifling development in the city.
The Harare Residents Trust welcomed the suspension of Dr. Mahachi.
Chairman of the Combined Harare Residents Association, Simbarashe Moyo, concurs.
We have been saying that as residents, we need the best man for the job someone who is not political, because we believe that the town clerk is too political. He takes a lot of orders from outside the confines of town house.
Mavuku resident Jocelyn Manyeruke told Studio 7 that residents of Mavuku have gone for years without running water and they have to resort to other means to get the precious liquid.
Water problem is very serious in Mavuku. It's very, very serious. And the water is very serious.
The cash-strapped Harare City Council has also resorted to attaching and auctioning the property of defaulting ratepayers in a bid to recover over $340 million owed in unpaid rents. Goods being attached include fridges, sofas, generators, television sets, microwaves and bicycles, among others. Shumba says the move is insensitive, but Muzua says the city has no choice as it has to provide services to the residents. The daily struggle for survival in an economy with unemployment estimated at close to 90% has created another problem for Harare, as an estimated 20,000 vendors have invaded the central business district, making it an eyesore. Critics say this is a symptom of a collapsing state where political infighting and corruption are keeping people in poverty and misery. Many blame the political bickering at townhouse for the decay of a city once regarded as a model for a post-colonial city in a developing nation. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
First Lady Grace Mugabe today addressed thousands of people in Kadoma, where she blasted early child marriage practices and recent suggestions attributed to State Prosecutor General Johannes Tomana that 12-year-olds can consent to sex. The First Lady was speaking at a groundbreaking ceremony for a housing project in the town, where she was accompanied by the country's two vice presidents, Pelekezela Mpoko and Emmerson Mnangagwa, and local government minister Ignatius Chombo. She handed out donations consisting of shoes, blankets, and rice to some people, and also chanted the controversial Pasine Gamatok slogan.
The First Lady also commended Mpogo and Mnangagwa for taking notes during meetings and being vigilant on developmental issues, adding they were better than the previous office holder in what most viewed as an attack on former Vice President Joyce Mjuru. However, political analyst and ZANU-PF activist Maurice Ngwenya tells Studio 7 this was not a political rally.
The interests of women actually cover every other need in society, be it children, be it things to do with the families, welfare, social welfare, and the like. Therefore, to me, it's supposed to be a routine, we're supposed to be seeing it more often, but of course, she has a busy schedule.
What about the slogans and veiled attacks on the expelled former ZANU-PF officials?
I wouldn't really say there's an attack on an expelled official. Some of those people needed to hear from the Osmar, to hear from after doing the commendable job of exposing the road that took place, especially considering that the former vice president was in government on a women's ticket.
What can you say about the significance of her speech, especially on early child marriages?
This is what we expect from our mother, that we need to protect the girl child so that they grow up without being abused and without destroying their future.
That was political analyst and ZANU-PF activist Maurice Ngwenya on the line from Harare.
Founding president of the MDC today welcomed some people who were in the MDC Renewal Party who have defected to the MDCT. Morgan Changirai told a news conference in Harare that some members of ZAPU also want to join his party.
You know, as former colleagues, sometimes we have to find each other. And that's what I would like to introduce. The founding members of the MDC in Mashonaland and West include Matakama, Biga Orovi. I don't even think it's good to say they are coming back home. They have been part of the family. They will continue to be part of the family. We have Mr. Chambati here, who was an MP for Hurungwe West. You know, Mr. Chambati lost his brother. Those who were at the victims' conference you heard the narration that was given by one of the victims. It's actually his brother. And I want to say, for whatever disagreements that may have arisen, let that be a thing of the past.
That was Morgan Tsvangirai speaking with journalists in Harare.
Zimbabwe today remembers the life and legacy of the late nationalist Joshua Mqabuko Nyongolo Nkomo, who was also the vice president of Zimbabwe at the time of his death on July 1st, 1999. Nkomo, who died of cancer, is credited for bringing peace to the country in 1987 at a time when his Zipra forces were raring to wage a war against President Robert Mugabe's army in the 1980s.
Shortly after independence in 1980, Nkomo set up a vast business empire wholly owned by hundreds of demobilized Zipra cadres under a holding company called Nitram. The company was liquidated by the government during political skirmishes of the early 1980s that saw more than 20,000 people killed in an operation called Gukurahundi.
Some ZAPU supporters claim that Nkomo may have lost the general election to then ZANU leader Robert Mugabe before independence because of his well-known stance of allowing Zimbabweans to own land, something that the West did not want at the time. The West also viewed him as leaning too much on Marxism. During his political career, Nkomo also earned enemies, including some who had been very close to him, like the late former Home Affairs and Defense Minister Enos Nkala. We reached Rukari Kumbo, a war veteran who is also a former ZANU-PF spokesman, who says the late Nkomo was a liberation war icon.
Well, the struggle was difficult, was protected. Dar es Salaam Regime was formed in February 1969, in order to prosecute the armed struggle.
Now, can you briefly recall to us how you think of the late Dr. Joshua Nkomo as the father of nationalism in Zimbabwe?
Well, Dr. Nkomo made a major contribution to the liberation of Zimbabwe. He was, first of all, the first president of the ANC, African National Congress, of Southern Rhodesia in 1957. Then he became president of NDP. And later became president of ZAPU. After the split between ZAPU and ZANU, he became president or chairman of PCC, People's Caretaker Council. So he made an impact in the struggle against colonialism and imperialism.
That was Rukari Kumbo, a war veteran and former ZANU PF spokesman, on the line with Studio 7's Chris Gande from Harare.
Meanwhile, the son of the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo, who died 16 years ago, says most Zimbabwean leaders are too self-centered, a situation that has led to the current social, economic and political problems in the country. Michael Siwangalizwe Nkomo believes that Zimbabwe could be different today if most leaders followed his father's footsteps. Our correspondent Taurai Shava reports from Ulawayo.
Siwangalizwe Nkomo says his father was a selfless man who had time even for ordinary people. He says despite having little material possessions, Father Zimbabwe, as the late nationalist was popularly known, would always try to help people in every way possible. He says such humility and generosity are lacking in most of today's leaders, noting that their self-centeredness is partly to blame for some of the problems the country is currently facing.
The crop of leaders we have today, they like money. They are for themselves. They are not for the people. Mtala went out of his way to do things for the people. You didn't need an appointment to see Mtala. Ordinary people, anybody could come and knock at the door any time of the day, and he would welcome them and help them whichever way he could. But with the current crop of leadership, they don't answer telephones. I've tried it myself to try and talk to some leaders here. They don't even answer their telephones now. How do you expect to work for the people if you can't answer telephones? I'm sure wherever my father is, he must be shaking his head, wondering what kind of leadership we have.
Siwangalizwe Nkomo says, although it has been 16 years since his father's death, it still feels like yesterday as the nationalist's name gets constant mention in the media. Nkomo says rather than being sorrowful on such a day, his family normally celebrates the late vice president's death with joy and inspiration from his monumental achievements.
It brings hope, it brings vigor, into my life personally to say, no, something has to happen to better our lives, because the old man was committed to this nation so much that you can't help but feel good about it. You don't have time to cry, as it were. You can't cry over that we lost, you know, such a good man.
Nkomo equally praises President Robert Mugabe for being able to unite former Liberation Parties, PF ZAPU, that was led by his father, and ZANU-PF. Some Bulawayo residents still vividly remember the late nationalist, with some of them saying Nkomo left the nation a proud legacy. Gift Mtizwa says to him, the late vice president's most important achievement was that of being a peacemaker and a nation builder, a view shared by another resident who only wants to be identified as Stembile. Stembile says, although she was rather young when Nkomo died, she has over the years realized the huge role he played in the history of the nation.
He was a peacemaker. He managed to unite the people of Matabeleland and Mashonaland. He was a unifier. He managed to unify people of different ethnic groups. I think if he was still around, there was going to be change. Our economy was going to be in a better state.
Chairman Max Mkandla of the Zimbabwe Liberators Peace Forum echoes the same sentiments, saying Nkomo was passionate about empowering people and believed that it was important for indigenous blacks to own their land. While agreeing that the land reform program, which started a few years ago in Zimbabwe, has helped towards the realization of this goal, Mkandla laments the way in which it was carried out by the ruling ZANU-PF party, which resulted in some people getting multiple farms. Former war veterans leader Jabulani Sibanda, who was recently expelled from ZANU-PF for allegedly teaming up with some senior officials to try to remove Mr. Mugabe from power, says if Nkomo was alive today, he would be sad about what is happening in the country, where corruption and greed are the order of the day.
What we have in our country now, if Nkomo was here, we would be very much disappointed. You find one person who is running a concession, animal concession, is the same person who has got a ranch, is the same person who has got a cropping farm. He has got various industries in the utilization of land. We cannot have that. If a person wants to do cropping, he must do cropping and have a few cattle there for just his home purposes. But it should be known that this guy is cropping. It should be one family, one farm. One family, one piece of land. It's not only one man, one farm. It should be standardized size of farm.
From Kandla, Nkomo was a statesman who was broad-minded and would not have approved of the situation in which Zimbabwe has made enemies with other countries. He says Zimbabwe needs to mend its relations with the international community, as this would help revive the economy. And he believes that this is exactly what Nkomo fought for in the liberation struggle of the 1970s.
If you are a leader, you should embrace all countries so that they invest in the country, and then the people definitely will find the jobs and then to revive our economy.
A march known as the Joshua Mkabuko Legacy Walk, which is often held as part of commemorations to mark the death of the late Nkomo, has been moved to a date yet to be set by the organizers of the event. The late vice president remains loved by many who still cherish the moments they used to call him Chibwe Chitedza, Umdala Wetu, and Father Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 from Lawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Coming up.
Millions of Zimbabweans struggle to raise children in various countries.
And the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission says it is worried about human rights violations in the country.
The Human Rights Commission and the government must really act on this issue, because it is a really serious security issue.
Stay tuned for more details.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A debt-ridden Greece offered concessions Wednesday on its creditors' demands for more austerity measures, but Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras still urged his nation to vote no in a referendum Sunday on the lender's plan for new restrictions in exchange for more bailout loans.
U.S. President Barack Obama said Wednesday the United States and Cuba have agreed to reestablish diplomatic relations and plan to reopen embassies in Washington and Havana later this month in the latest move to end years of hostility between the two countries.
Egypt's Islamic State affiliate claimed responsibility for a wave of attacks Wednesday in the Sinai Peninsula that security officials said killed at least 20 soldiers.
And Indonesian authorities say the death toll from a military transport plane crash has spiked to 141 as rescuers continue searching the wreckage in a residential neighborhood on the island of Sumatra.
Millions of Zimbabweans struggle to raise children in various countries like Britain, United States, Australia, South Africa, and other nations where they have become citizens or are economic and political refugees. Most of them are failing to adjust to some localized ways of raising children who face, among other issues, peer pressure and parents' so-called Africanized upbringing, which is a load of cultural demands, including ways of relating and addressing family members, neighbors, and other people. It becomes more complicated in some nations where unfamiliar cultures like gay marriage start encroaching into their households. In some cases, children end up leaving their homes when parents protest over the sexual orientation of their children and some other unfamiliar cultures. For perspective, we reached Duran Raposo, a Zimbabwean living in Manchester, Britain, and Sakile Dubene, another Zimbabwean living in Gaborone, Botswana. Raposo tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that lack of extended families to help in childcare and disciplining children has been one of the major challenges faced by his family and other Zimbabweans living in that country.
I think the biggest challenge I faced myself for raising kids in the UK has been there are no extended families around who can support in terms of childcare, whether it could be discipline as well of the children. And then it's only you and your wife. But sometimes, for example, like us who are Christians as well, nowadays we use the church as well to supplement the place which the aunties, the grandmas, have not been able to fulfill.
Let's bring in Ms. Ne. Tell us, how did you find bringing up kids in Botswana?
For me, life is just, it's okay. I don't have a problem in raising my kids. I taught them how to respect. I teach them how to do homework, and I teach them how to behave in society and do some homework, come from school, clean the houses, not to associate with wrong people at the wrong time, always home.
Mr. Raposo, Mrs. Ne is touching on a very sensitive issue of kids having these kind of relations with others in the community. Some of them may be wayward, you know. How to handle that kind of thing?
It's quite tricky when it comes to the UK or Europe when compared to countries like Botswana, where, for example, in Botswana, you've got more of an outdoor life. You've got a sense of community there. In the UK, even if you ask myself how many of my neighbors where I have lived for almost about 17 years, I know I hardly meet them. So when it comes to discipline, we discipline our kids, and we are raising our kids also trying to match between our cultural values as Africans as well as the European values as well, because they are exposed most of the time through the European education system, where the education system teaches them about their rights as well.
So,
we are caught in between.
Mm-hmm. So talking about this cultural exposure, how do you handle a situation where maybe a kid comes to you and says, I'm gay or something like that?
For me now, having been in the UK, I work with gay people. And what risk do they give to me? Nothing. What's the problem they've caused into my own life? Nothing, because it's part of their private life. That has got nothing to do with me, and I don't interfere with their way of life. They don't interfere with my own way of life. So for me, the way I view that would be totally different as well with how I could have reacted myself when I was in Zimbabwe, for example. So at the end of the day, we've got children who can come to us and say, this is who they are, and what can you do as a parent? You can't force a horse to drink water when it doesn't want to drink water. It's difficult for us parents to accept that, because the community is going to view us as a bad family, a family that is inferior to others. I know how difficult it is for parents, but what can you do? nothing he can do. Yeah.
Mrs. Ne, there you are. You're saying that literally he can end up accepting.
For me, it can be hard to accept it. It's going to be hard because it's like, I can give you an example, like a village which I grow up in, Zim. So it's just a small village in Mzimwani district. That area, I've never seen a gay. So even if now I can say I'm a daughter to a Dube family and they just find out that I'm a lesbian, I don't think the society will look me in a such a way that, how did she become a lesbian, something like that. So for me, I was never exposed to such people. Even where I am now, I've never seen them. Also, I don't wish to have them in my family or anywhere near my society. For me, it's no.
Mr. Raposo?
I think, Mrs. Dube, one thing we forget to understand, I think, if you see most of the statistics that are coming out now in Zimbabwe, we are coming across quite a lot of young kids who have been abused, for example, with their uncles and so forth. And then the mom, instead of supporting the children, has been saying the child should be quiet, it will give you a bad image for the family, and so forth. So I'm just trying to give that scenario because our society is closed. It doesn't want us to talk about all these issues in open. For example, Uganda, where you are told that if they discover that you are gay, you can be stoned into death, you can be killed. In Zimbabwe, with the president who doesn't want to hear anything about gay. But we have them. It's happening underground.
Your last word, Mrs. Ne.
I think kids, you have to teach them how to behave, how to respect the family, how to respect the neighbor, how to follow the tradition. I think you will see your kid growing in such a way that you never regret tomorrow.
That was Duran Raposo, a Zimbabwean living in Manchester, Britain. You also heard from Sakile Dubene, another Zimbabwean living in Gaborone, Botswana, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Preliminary returns are slowly coming in after parliamentary voting in Burundi on June 29th. The district-by-district count was slowed by protests and a boycott by many opposition groups, following weeks of violent protests against President Pierre Nkurunziza's intent to win a third term in office. The United States is deeply disappointed that the government in Bujumbura proceeded with the vote, despite woefully inadequate conditions for credible elections. It's also unfortunate that the authorities disregarded strong urging by the African Union, the United Nations Secretary General, and many others in the international community for a delay. Because of the turmoil, the United States felt it couldn't be part of the process and put a hold on technical assistance planned for the Independent National Election Commission, as well as voter education activities to be coordinated with the commission. We continue to call on President Nkurunziza to put his nation's and his people's welfare ahead of his wish to serve a third term, and that he heed calls for dialogue and demonstrate respect for the Arusha Agreement and its term limits provisions. We urge the Burundian government to return to the table and to participate seriously in the political dialogue facilitated by UN Special Representative Bathily and others. We want all stakeholders to reach consensus on new electoral dates and find a political solution to this crisis. Because of the current security situation and closure of political and media space, we support the AU's decision not to send electoral observers. Free, fair, and credible elections are impossible. We share the AU's concern about the hardships facing the people of Burundi and urge President Nkurunziza to cooperate fully with the AU and regional organizations to resolve the current crisis and enable credible elections to go forward at a later date.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts, Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube, will be talking with listeners and experts about the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo's legacy 16 years after his death.
To join the discussion, text us at 001202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
The son of the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo, who died 16 years ago, says most Zimbabwean leaders are too self-centered, a situation that has led to the current social, economic and political problems in the country.
The Harare City Council has suspended town clerk Tendai Mahachi as the city with dirty streets, collapsing buildings and high crime rate almost crumbles.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemire.
And I'm Sitandekile Mhlanga, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.